I'd like to welcome everyone here to this SACPAW meeting, and I'd like to remind you that the cost of the lunch is $8, and would you please place it on the basket on your table, and I hope that someone at each table will take care of that. I'd like to acknowledge the help of the SACPAW partners, Shaw TV, the University of Lethbridge, and Erickson's Restaurant. For those here for the first time, we start with the speaker's presentation for about a half hour. At about 12:30, we'll break for lunch, and we'll reconvene after lunch for the question period until 1:30. Our topic for the day is Income Trusts, What Now? And this will cover what is an income trust, how are they structured, different types, and why they came about. The changes that have happened as a result of the announcement by the Government of Canada on October 31st, 2006, and what effect this has on the average investor and the market as a whole. And I'm pleased to very pleased to introduce our speaker, Bob Thompson. He is a vice president and investment advisor with the RBC Dominion Securities. He has been there since 1989. Prior to that, he was a bank manager and trust company manager for about 20 years. He specializes in management of investment portfolios. He is a certified financial planner and is a fellow of the Canadian Securities Institute. He is married with four children and six grandchildren. It's a pleasure to have Bob come to the mic.
Ladies and gentlemen and friends, many of you I know and some of you I don't know, and I appreciate the opportunity to speak with you today. Einard phoned me up a little while ago. I didn't realize that he was going to be the master of arms at this thing, and I was a little worried when Gordon Campbell came in because I don't know how we're going to keep down the rowdies because Einard is a little short here. But I trust that he can handle that. This is an appropriate topic and a topical topic because of some recent changes that have happened, but really it's probably something that people should have known about for some time. Do I have this at a proper height? Okay. If you can't hear me, hold up your hands. If you don't want to hear me, too bad. First, let me talk to you about what an income trust is. Income trusts are referred to by the government as flow-through entities. But basically, when you look at an income trust, you need to compare it to a company. When you set up a company is basically a separate individual. Our lawyer friends could explain the legal ramifications of it, of how you do it, but there are shareholders who own shares in a company. They own portions of it. And they are entitled, if the company is dissolved, to their share of whatever's left at the end. Usually companies aren't dissolved, at least big companies, unless they go broke, and then there's nothing left at the end for the shareholders. And so that's easy. During their lifetime, a company supposedly is in business to make a profit. Each year when they tally up their profits at the end of the year, they send a certain amount of that to the government of Canada and a certain amount to the provincial government, pay their taxes, and at the end they've got something left over, they hope. And with that, they will take a portion of what they've got left over and use that to build their business if they need it. And if there's anything left over after they've done that, then they might pay a dividend to the shareholders. And many of you would hold shares in various companies. You might hold a share in a bank or an oil and gas company or whatever kind of a company, and you'd receive regular dividends from those companies if they're making profits and they do pay dividends. When you receive that dividend, you pay tax on the dividend. So you basically have the company pays tax on its profits, and then the shareholder pays tax on the dividend that he receives. If it happens to be a Canadian company, there's what is called a dividend tax credit. And I would never attempt to explain that. I need somebody with, you know, an accounting degree to try and explain that, and they can do that for you. But you get a little bit of a credit that ensures that basically the total amount of profits that this company made by the time it has paid taxes and by the time you have paid taxes, the amount of tax that's paid is approximately equal to if that profit had been made by yourself as salary or whatever. Okay, that's kind of the basic outline. For many years, there have been trusts available, and our friend John Boris here would know all about trusts. He could tell you everything there you need to know, because trusts are an integral part of setting up wills and doing estates and that. And a trust was basically, in the olden days, if you had a son, for example, and you wanted to leave him some money, but he wasn't really good at handling his money, you might turn the money over to a trustee, and he would hold that on behalf of your spendthrift son, and then the trustee would just give him the income so that he couldn't spend all the capital and lose it. Now, it wouldn't really be fair for the trust to pay tax and then ultimately the individual to pay tax. So basically, that money flowed through to the beneficiary who ended up paying the tax on it. Well, of course, somebody figured this out. Probably a lawyer. I don't want to get myself in trouble. I'm sitting right beside John, but somebody probably figured this out. Well, what if we took a company and instead of setting it up as a company, we set it up as a trust? And then then the trust wouldn't have to pay any taxes. It could just flow through all of its earnings to the owners of that trust, who would be called unit holders. So basically, that's what happened. Well, in 1995, I have a little chart here that shows the growth of these types of trusts. And it isn't bad eyes, but in 1995, there's a little line down here that shows how much there was in trusts, and that would be about $500 million worth of that. Now, you know, that's a lot of money to everybody here except John, you know, but it's a lot of money to most of us, but it isn't a big amount of money in the grand scheme of things. By 2006, October 31st of 2006, there were about 200 and some billion dollars worth of these trusts that were set up, and another 70 or 80 billion that had announced their intention to convert to trusts. Why would they do that? Why would they convert to trusts? Purely that it gave a tax advantage. The company no longer paid tax. It just sent its income through to the unit holders. Now, the growth has been astronomical. If you look at that line and you look at that chart, it's a huge growth in the last couple of years. It's gone up a lot. And whenever something like this happens, and I'm going to go over some other things that have happened similar to it, I expect that somebody in the finance department would kind of figure out, maybe this is something we should look at. And so eventually they did figure that out. And they looked at it on October 31st, as a surprise to everybody, after the market had closed and before the kids had gone out Halloweening, which in my mind was a more memorable event than the announcement. But before they'd gone out Halloweening, they announced that they were going to change it. And the change they're basically going to do is they're going to treat trusts like companies. So trusts are going to pay taxes. And then they're going to send the rest of their earnings through to the unit holders, and then the unit holders will pay tax on what they receive, but they're going to have the same sort of facility so that you get a dividend tax credit. And, you know, all these things, they used to call the Income Tax Act the Accountants' Relief Act. And I think basically that's what they're going to do. They're going to give the accountants more time or more ability to put more numbers in more squares, as that's what is going to end up happening. What's the ultimate effect on you and I? If you hold a trust outside of a registered plan, it's not going to make much difference to you at all. Because basically, the company will pay tax on their earnings. They will send a little less to you, but because you're receiving a little less, you'll pay a little less tax than you would have otherwise. So the ultimate effect is that on $1,000 worth of earnings that the company or the trust has, you'll end up with the same net amount. Well, why would they bother? Well, there are a couple of reasons. First of all, income trusts were starting to be held a lot by registered plans. So you'd hold them in your RSP or, for this crowd, your RIF, and you'd hold them there. And ultimately, your RIF doesn't pay any taxes until you take any money out. Well, there's some over there that are still in the RSP stage. But nevertheless, you'd hold it there, and you wouldn't be paying tax on it. Well, the government doesn't like it when they don't get tax. And so they weren't receiving any tax money in until you ultimately took it out. Another major thing that was happening is that a lot of these trusts were held by non-residents. Now, if you've ever been a non-resident, you know that any income that you get from Canada is subject to non-resident withholding tax. And that non-resident withholding tax is roughly 15%. Not every country is that. It depends on tax treaties. So whereas a Canadian in Alberta, thank heavens, would pay a maximum of 39%, a foreigner who held these would pay 15%. Well, I don't know about you, but I'm kind of in favor of foreigners paying more tax than Canadians. You know, I mean, it's just my thing. I think it's better that they, or at least the same amount on these earnings. Another thing that was happening is that this was affecting provincial revenue. And the reason why is that companies pay tax to the provinces as well. They pay tax based on where their business is done. So if you have a large oil and gas company in Alberta, and who doesn't, but if you have one in Alberta, you have a lot of money that's paid in tax to the provincial government. However, if it's a trust, the tax is not paid by the trust. It's paid by the unit holders who may or may not live in the province. And a number of the trusts were oil and gas trusts. Those businesses are based in Alberta. The province of Alberta estimated that last year they lost approximately $400 million in tax revenue that would have otherwise come to them because of this trust structure. Now, the changes that the government has announced will alleviate that problem. Those taxes will then be paid to the province where that trust is resident or is doing business. Now, I know I'm being more simplistic on all of this than probably is the fact. Many companies have business across all the provinces and they have to apportion their business all across the country. But basically, if you have that Alberta company now will be paying tax in Alberta, and the Alberta government will be getting it. Again, I'm in favor of the Alberta government getting the appropriate amount of tax revenue rather than the Ontario government getting it, surprised enough. Even though my wife was born in Ontario and they produce wonderful wives there, I don't have much else to say. Okay. Oh, I could be in trouble. You want to delete that part, please. There. Well, so what has happened? What has happened to the market for trusts? Well, frankly, it's been a mixed bag. One of the things that happened is that they exempted real estate trusts from this change. And I really can't go into why they did it. Real estate trusts are owned and they're common in a number of countries and the structure is the same. And because of that, they decided to leave them alone. So real estate trusts have actually gone up in value since the end of October. And, you know, all the guys who are smarter say, yeah, I own those. And the guys that owned the ones that went down are just smiling because they don't want anybody to know that they own those. But other things, money doesn't just come out of stuff and go nowhere. It doesn't disappear into thin air. Well, except for the stuff I used to give my kids. But money just doesn't disappear. Other things have gone up in value. I had an interesting situation. My wife inherited a small amount of money from her mother. And on September 11th, we put that money in what for her was an appropriate portfolio. And for you might not be. But for her, it was appropriate. And we put roughly 70% in the Canadian market. We put 10%, 77%, I guess it was in Canadian, 10% in the U.S., 10% in foreign, and I left 3% in cash in case she decides she wants to spend some money. But we left a little bit in cash because you always do. Now, that went in on September the 11th. It happened to be a day when the market was rather high because that's a rule of investing. This is a rule, I'll tell you. If you decide to buy something today, it will go down in price tomorrow. Okay? If you decide to wait until tomorrow to buy it, it will go up in price tomorrow. And I think it's a rule. They taught us that in broker school. Yeah. But over time, it didn't really matter. So we put in a certain amount of money. I won't tell you how much. It's not enough for her to retire on. She's already retired. It was nice. And so we put it in. And by the end of September, because the market just kind of waffled around, she was up 0.4%. By the end of October was a great month. By then, she was up a total of 4.1% in 6 weeks. And I told her how smart her broker was. Believe me. I didn't talk to her after November the 1st because her account, out of that Canadian portfolio, there was 27% was an income trust. Okay? 27% of the 77%. By the end of November the 1st, her account was down to almost what she'd put in it. So, basically, she was up 0.2%. Well, you know, there was no point in me telling her what it was worth the next day because, I mean, she would get bored. But I told her what it was worth yesterday. By then, it was up a total of 2.3%. It had come up almost to where it was at the end of October, not quite, but it's up 2.3%. And I looked at that and I thought, that's not bad in 2 months. You know, 2.3%, that's a percent a month, 12% a year if it continues on like that, and it probably won't, but 2.3% is not bad. You know, you'd have to own a GIC for about 7 or 8 months before you'd get 2.3%. But if you look at her total portfolio, some things were down, some things were up. Her bank shares went up a lot. One of the things we bought was Royal Bank shares. They went up lots. They've been great. I love them. She owned some shares in Canadian National Railway. It's up about 15% in those 2 months. That's been great. Wasn't affected by what happened. You know, funny enough, after everything that happened on October 31st, after this terrible announcement, and even after reading the dismal reports the next day in the Globe and the National Post and the Lethbridge Herald, the world did not come to an end after they made this change. I even read some letters to the editor that I think were predicting the end of the world, the end of the Conservative government, the end of everything else. And no matter what you think, I don't think the world will end because of this change. Some people's portfolios went down. Some people's portfolios went up. If they had a balanced portfolio, they're probably doing just fine. But, like so many things in life, we all seem to think that there's one answer to every question. In 1990, there was a good book produced, and And you have to kind of be in my business to be able to read it and find these things interesting. But the title was Risk is a Four-Letter Word. In 2000, 10 years later, because sales of the 1991, I think, had kind of peaked, he brought out another one, and he says, Risk is still a four-letter word. You know? Now, for those of you with university education, you could probably figure out risk is a four-letter word, yes. But what he's referring to there is that people just really ignore risk, and they don't have balanced portfolios. And let me tell you a couple of examples. I've got a couple minutes left. In the year 1991, we had a number of people that came to see us. They had all of their money invested in GICs. Because as we all knew, GICs were going to pay 10% minimum forever. And we had, I remember an older couple who came to us and said, what are we going to do? We had $200,000 in GICs at the bank. And we went and we were earning $20,000 a year. And with our old age security and our Canada pension plan, we were fine. But we just went in because our GICs matured and they want to pay us 3.5%. That means our income on $200,000 is going to be $7,000 a year. My first comment is to them is that you had a very risky portfolio. They said, oh no, everything's guaranteed. Well, I'm sorry, but you had a very risky portfolio because this portfolio was supposed to provide you with an income for the rest of your life. And you don't know how long you're going to live. Probably shorter now that you're so upset about this. But you don't know how long you're going to be around. The fact of the matter is because you only had a 5-year guarantee on that 10%, you had a very risky portfolio. You didn't know whether it was going to go up or down. If this was the John Gogol pension fund, and John's manager had put everything in there, and all of a sudden his income was going to go down by 65%, he'd be upset and probably justified in being that way. He had a lousy portfolio manager. If pension funds ran their business like that, you'd say they were taking on way too much risk because their liabilities don't match their assets. In the early 1980s, there was a deal, really good deal. You could go to an insurance company and you could buy what they called a deferred annuity. It was just like a GIC, but you didn't ever have to pay tax on the interest because it was an insurance policy until you cashed it in. Well, it had been around for years, but hardly anybody used it because interest rates were low. Now in the 1980s, you remember we had 16, 17, 18, 19%, 19.75% Canada savings bonds. I mean, those are great. And so people were shoving their money and lots of money into those. The government finally figured it out. Because these aren't really dumb people that we elect. You know, despite some people's belief. They are smart, intelligent people. They figured it out. And so they changed the rules. Now, I know that that's a surprise to people that government can change rules. I mean, they do sometimes. And I would expect if I was electing or hiring somebody to run my country, that if things changed, I would want them to change the rules. They changed the rules and said, okay, we're not going to allow you to do this. We'll allow you for now to compound for the next 3 years, and then you have to pay the interest, and then after that you have to pay the tax on it every year after that. They changed the rules. Interest rates change. Everything changed. Am I upset because this change was made? I expect that changes will happen all the time. Now, I expect that some of you have questions that are going to happen, that you're going to want to ask. And I want to set some ground rules. Okay. First of all, I have no idea what the political implications of this are. I'm sure that some of you might want to know whether this will result in the fall of the Conservative government. I've always voted for the wrong people. I've never gotten that one right. So I have no expertise in that. Please, when it comes time for question period, don't ask me about a specific investment or income trust. I don't know you well enough to tell you whether that's an appropriate investment for you. I can tell you general things about them. I can tell you some things about some of them, but I can't specifically recommend a specific investment. Unless I know you, it's illegal for me to do so. So I won't. But there are a lot of interesting things about this. The Government of Canada on their website produced an interesting document. Well, as interesting as they ever get. It's about 12 pages. It's a backgrounder, and it talks about the effects of these. I must say one thing I was impressed about is that this was a surprise to everybody. Nobody was anticipating it. If you look at the trading in income trust that day, there was no trading that indicated that leaks were happening in the government. This was kept a secret, which was nice from my point of view because it meant that people weren't getting information that they shouldn't have gotten. Unlike in previous situations. Last October, there was going to be a change, and all of a sudden, there was a whole bunch of people that seemed to know it ahead of time. And they're still investigating that one. So I was happy to hear that part of it. I appreciate your time. I know my time is up, and I was told I could go till 12:30, and it's about 12:30 now. And I appreciate your time. And if you have any questions, we'll deal with them after we've eaten and talked about them. Thank you very much.